How are municipalities and other regional governments approaching culture planning and strategy today? What trends are taking hold in culture planning and service delivery? And how do consultants who work with them ensure that their approaches reflect current trends and are genuinely connected to community development? Hello and welcome to the 9th episode of At the Mic au Micro, a podcast brought to you by Arts Consultants Canada, l'Association des Consultants Canadiens en Arts. ACCA acknowledges the support of the Canada Council for the Arts for this podcast series. Nous remercions le Conseil des Arts du Canada pour son soutien à cette série de balado. In this episode of At the Mic, consultants Peter Lyman and Mila Deschef-Tweddle from Nordicity discuss their observations of how culture planning has evolved over the past decade and what approaches their team use to ensure successful community-engaged planning process. Based in Toronto, Vancouver, and the UK, Nordicity is an international consulting firm with a group of diverse professionals who provide solutions to private and public sector clients in arts, culture, and heritage, digital and creative media, innovation, and information and community technologies. Peter Lyman is senior partner of Nordicity, which he co-founded in 1979. Over the decades, he's found new ways to help companies, arts and heritage institutions, industry associations, and government agencies to transform themselves to the digital world. He is fluently bilingual and holds an MBA from Harvard Business School. Peter is a media commenter and frequent panelist or moderator at conferences. He's active in the arts and social justice community as past chair of the board for the InSpirit Foundation, governance chair of Toronto's Canadian Stage, and currently is a board member for Caribbean Tales Media. He's an adjunct professor at Schulich Business School at York University, where he teaches cultural policy to MBA students in arts and media. Mila Deschef-Tweddle is director at Nordicity in their Toronto office. She's a skilled consultant and leader who works closely with clients and stakeholders to proactively respond to key issues and opportunities. Building from her background in museums and heritage, Mila works primarily with clients in the cultural sector. Her work ranges from policy analysis, evaluation, and development to economic and social impact assessment and to strategy development at both the organizational and sector level. Fluently bilingual in French and English, Mila has a proven track record of developing and implementing multifaceted methodologies and leading effective stakeholder and community engagement in both languages to inform development of meaningful and actionable recommendations for her clients. And now, here are Peter Lyman and Mila Deschef-Tweddle.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Pretty good. It's a hot day out here. But I understand we're doing a little podcast for the ACA.
Yeah, we're going to, I think, chat about culture planning. So maybe you can kick us off, just talk a little bit about Nordicity's culture planning practice and how we got into it and what kinds of work we do in that space.
We, our company, has been in the cultural field a number of ways for some time. And we had never really done cultural planning, but we had done cultural policy and cultural affairs and the economics of culture. We never really did much cultural planning, but we saw the work out there that municipalities were desirous of doing cultural plans or cultural strategies, and so inched their way into the business, maybe on the backs of what we did know about cultural planning. And that was, again, more the creative industries and the broad national or regional or culture. So we didn't know the orthodoxy between cultural planning in cultural planning so much. So as I said, we came in it sideways and jointly with others, and until we gradually absorbed the culture of cultural planning. And now we have, I'd say, quite a large part of our business is cultural planning, as you well know. How did you first get involved in cultural planning? I think it was almost a decade ago, right?
Probably close to that. Yeah, roughly a decade. I think what's interesting about our culture planning work is at the sector level, working with individual organizations, groups, things like that. And I think what's really interesting about the culture planning work is it allows us to bring that experience on the ground experience and being in the weeds with the sector and bring it up into that kind of systems thinking where we're helping municipalities or regional or other kind of government organizations to plan around how to best support the growth and development of the culture sector for the benefit of communities. So we kind of straddle both worlds in a way, which is mutually beneficial to the work we do in each context, understanding the systems level stuff, but also understanding what's happening on the ground at the community level as well.
Yeah, I suppose that before we get too far into this, we should say what we think cultural planning is and how we've seen it. And we've described how we came into it. But what is cultural planning per se? I know it is, first of all, it's a recognition at the municipal level or whatever jurisdictional level it is, that professional arts and the participation in arts are very important activities and part of our overall community. And what does the average municipality have to do with respect to the arts? And you look at its, what its responsibilities are. First, you could say that usually it has a budget of some sort, either arm's length or not, that it provides funds for initiatives of the, in the community and adjudicates among different applications. And so that's one area, but that's a more direct area. Also, typically there would be a number of facilities in the community in which the art forms take place, which could be at the kind of level of just participation for arts classes of some sort, but also would be where the professional activities would occur or in other facilities. So you have the live entertainment, live arts as part of it. And all those organizations have to be supported in some way, at the very least, in a facilitating way by the municipality, but also they can help stimulate more involvement, either at the professional or the more casual participatory end. And then it can get more sophisticated than that, where you want to make sure that the history of the community and the community organizations are featured. So you have the museums, art galleries, which house some of the works that the people have done in the past and have exhibitions. There is that side of it too. So it looks at all across the board, the activities. And usually when cultural planning occurs, city officials say, we must make sure that everybody is on board with what we're doing. First of all, recognizing that arts and culture are important. And I must add one, public art comes into it too, where either part of natural history or an art form developed for the city as in a statue of something becomes part of heritage, but it's really part of the overall basket of arts and culture and cultural policy. Different jurisdictions have different pain points, points of, that they want to develop and push forward. So that's where I would say probably I've said enough about what the actual cultural planning is. It does end up with usually a 3 to 5 year cultural plan where a few goals are selected and there's a priority setting and then some actions around those goals, which generally then form a plan that hopefully you've had the kind of consultation and engagement with all citizens and all important interest groups and reflects what they all have felt. So that's generally what cultural planning is in my way of describing it, Mila.
That's great. And obviously, just picking up on your point about how these plans have a 5 to 10 year lifespan, and we've been at it, as we alluded to, for coming on to a decade now. So what are some of the kind of, as I know, as that as time has gone on, we've seen, and we're into kind of the second or third, in some cases, kind of cycle for a lot of these communities. And we've seen a shift in how cultural planning is shaped and what's prioritized in the process and in the product. And so what are some of the kind of trends that we're seeing in culture planning now that you've observed or that we've observed as a team?
Well, as you know, every municipality seems to have a different focus, although after you've been to a number of them, you can say, I've seen this before, but they all have different histories and different communities there represented. But what we've seen a lot of is the recognition that perhaps in the past, the cultural activities have been mainly emanation from certain part of the community, which is maybe a bit more well off, is a bit older, it's a bit more conventional or traditional to European cultures. And so there's a recognition certainly across the board that, first of all these communities should be consulted that were left out of that process before. And that could be indigenous, it could be a certain ethnic group, it could be an intersection between ethnicity and income levels. So that the trend is, if you like to put it that way, is support and help for the communities to have a process that is inclusive, that involves bringing in the opinions and the needs of people who were formerly neglected. And that's not as easy as it sounds, because one of the reasons why they were neglected is that they don't necessarily read the same publications or publicity about the planning process. So you have to realize that you have to communicate in different ways. So the trend toward broadening the communications and the community structure is very evident. So that's one of the major trends.
We've definitely seen this kind of emphasis on using a decolonized lens, a diversity and equity and inclusion lens, both in how we approach the plan development process, or municipalities are approaching the plan development process, but also in ensuring that kind of lens is visible and reflected in the plan itself, and that the strategies support those broader municipal goals around decolonization and diversity, equity, inclusion, accessibility. So I totally agree. I think there's this emphasis on just ensuring that it's not a unidimensional plan that's only serving one segment, and that there's this emphasis on that kind of broad representation. There's also, related to that, you touched on the piece about getting into the community. And I think definitely another trend we're seeing is this emphasis on community engaged processes to plan development, and using innovative engagement approaches that kind of ensure that broad, inclusive and authentic, more importantly, community engagement. So there's a push to make sure that, as you mentioned, historically underrepresented voices are heard in the process. We're seeing a lot of emphasis on bringing youth into the discussion, Indigenous and equal communities and other equity deserving communities. And there's also just this push toward deeper engagement that includes multiple touch points, as well as that feedback loop process with community validation steps and things being more common as well. So again, it's not this kind of very colonial, we'll just come in, collect a bit of data, and then go off and do our plan. And that's the only touch point you have. So it's this deeper community engaged process that we're seeing. What other trends can you think of?
Other trends would include the recognition, and as part of this, what we've just been talking about, but the recognition that cultural plans and social development go together. It's the community development, if you want to put it that way, that when officials talk to us who are directors of cultural planning, they may be associated with the economic development department. They may be associated with community affairs or parks and recreation. They're now saying you can add community development to any title we have. And so we recognize that a healthy community pays attention to wellness and health, and indeed the vibrancy of culture is going to be a community that is going to attract others to live there. Matter of fact, I suppose that these days, if they have a supply of low-cost housing options, that will be enough of an attraction. But beyond that, to make communities more sustainable in the long run, it's recognized that as a deep connection to the community development. That's one other trend.
I agree. I think we've definitely seen that there's a focus on plans that support those community development goals. We're seeing a lot more language around the role that arts and culture play in placemaking and cultural exchange and building social cohesion and connection and things like that. Those are becoming really common themes that we're seeing in the goals that municipalities have around these plans.
I think beyond that, and it's always been there in some ways, but I think the economic side is not being neglected. It's being recognized that culture has an economic value. And of course, communities, if they're going to implement cultural plans, it usually involves some allocation of resources, whether it's an extra person or two to make them happen, or it's the building of a facility and so on. So they're going to make a case. So the economic case is one thing which we find it's becoming important in the cultural plans that we get involved with. And that is when they say, all right, so all these activities must generate income from somebody, i.e. jobs. So how much is that? So you get into that kind of impact assessment type of thing as part of the economics, usually not as a dominant part of the exercise, but as an important part of it. And I know we at Nordicity have a lot of experience in that in the creative industries. It was something that we could touch upon. Another thing I think is just in the implementation of this, the idea that you can collaborate with all kinds of other organizations or even organizations among themselves. Like if you have three or four organizations that all say they need special facilities or special equipment, and it doesn't have to be one for each of them. It can be, if you can make it work, and it's not easy necessarily to do that, but is to combine some of the needs and respond to it in a way that saves resources so you get more done. So the efforts on collaboration, facilitating collaboration is something that is a trend. And we see that as part of the Canada Council, which of course supports artistic creativity, not necessarily cultural planning, but when it launched its technology strategy fund.
Digital strategy fund.
Yes. It brought together organizations that really were not used to working together and bringing them together around, let's say, making better use of audience data that comes from the performance part of the cultural activities. And certainly in maybe larger centers, that was a bit more of an effort, but we find that small or large or medium, the collaboration is important. And the tools for collaboration, of course, have become much more effective, but it's the soft part of it too that you have to deal with. So not only whether you have Zoom or not, it's the ability for people to sit down and actually do some give and take rather than just be in their narrower paradigms. So that's another trend. I think it's the economic and the collaboration, partly because of the economics of the times is forcing us to do that, and arts and culture are no exception.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point because I think we've been talking about culture planning, and I think it's widely probably understood from this lens of it's being led by a municipality or a government body at another level of government, and it's this almost top-down approach. But the example you're talking about is really where there's also an opportunity to have this more sector-led grassroots cultural planning that's based in collaboration, and it galvanizes the sector to lead sector development and innovation from the ground up rather than top down through the municipalities. Though, to your point, funders and municipal bodies and folks like that can really play a key role in enabling or facilitating that work happening. And I think there's a recognition more and more. I've even seen it too, where municipalities are saying, our role is to act as the connector. Our role is to create the conditions to allow the sector to come together and do this important work rather than us trying to tell them what to do. So there's definitely a shift there. And it's interesting. We've certainly been involved in some really interesting efforts where we've been working with the sector at that ground up level.
And part of this is getting things done too. In the past, maybe having a plan and saying, oh, I look at it every day is what officials have said to me. Anyway, it's my guiding star. But what have you actually done? And there are limited resources and so on. But now there seems to be a bit more emphasis on, okay, what do we do to take the next step toward building something? And as that takes the form of facilities, and I think there's a little bit, it's not a construction boom, as it were, but it's a boom on actually looking at refurbishing, adaptive reusing, building new facilities that kind of emanate from these plans. So there's something tangible that comes into it. And of course, they're capital intensive. And so you get to a different level of trying to attain funds from public sources, of course. And even that is changing. The ground is changing as we speak. There's our emphasis on green funds now, as opposed to cultural capital funds, a whole shift in the program at the federal level. So that's a bit of a trend which reinforces that kind of collaboration requirement and setting up a governance structure that enables the institution to raise funds outside of just municipal granting funds or municipal derived funds. It's where the fundraising comes in, but it really can only happen if it's from the community. And so the community cultural plans and the participatory nature of them that we're see evolving and are stressing to make sure that they work, you arise the ability to keep on going, derive some needed funds to kickstart the other levels of government to participate in them. That's this trend.
With all that in mind, I'd love to talk a little bit about how we at Nordicity approach cultural planning projects, what processes we use, and what approaches and tools we're using to successfully develop these types of culture plans.
We haven't talked about what Nordicity is, but the only thing I'll say is that we have about 30 professionals in the company, most of them in Canada, some in the UK, and spread across Canada. I'd say 40 or 50% of them have been involved actively in cultural plans. So internally, when an RFP comes up or somebody gets wind of something, we try to be quite communication-oriented in ourselves to make it open to anybody to say, I'd like to get involved in that, and this is the reason, because I have been involved in something else that relates to this. It's because of cultural planning challenges are diverse across the country, different things. So different elements become more important depending on the community, whether it's financially, economics, or participatory with Indigenous communities, whether it's in the North, different languages. With a larger team, you have more likelihood of others being able to help you on this. But we also have mandates in which we need a much better communications connector to the community. Take the Indigenous community, for example. Every Indigenous community around the country is quite different from every other one. So it isn't like you have an Indigenous person, oh, they connect with an Indigenous community. You've got to have the right people or at least engage them in the right way. But that brings us back down to how we do it. So you're talking about how we do it. We definitely have teams in which we include outsiders, again, connector, and also occasionally where we don't have the professional expertise on some aspect of it, whether it's collections management in a museum, whatever, it's somebody we quote and get to. We like to make sure that we have good relationships with anybody in the consulting community who's in the arts consulting community, and just say openly that we welcome your input. If you see an opportunity you can't quite work it yourself, we can talk and point you in a direction or show you what we've done in the past in that particular situation.
I think it's great to emphasize the fact that we reach out to grab, whether it's internal expertise or external expertise through the use of partners, to really ground the work in best practices and ensure we're getting that cross-pollination. Again, whether it's internally or with external partners, that certainly informs our process. But I think it'd be good to just talk about just generally our approach to culture planning, just speaking to, again, some of the trends that we talked about around an emphasis on having community engaged processes and community led processes with deep engagement. I know that Nordicity really prides ourselves on using a ground up approach where we're using the community needs as the foundation for our planning that we're then supplementing with that additional research and understanding of best practices. So we can maybe talk a little bit about just that community engaged process and how we go about that.
I continue to be impressed by the diversity of ways in which we come up with to reach a community, all the way from pop-ups, typically at occasions where there's a lot of other people gathered for a festival or an art fair or what have you, to the use of different technology platforms, to mural boards, the way of, I can't remember the name of the platform, but the way of voting on certain things, and how quickly people are able to adapt to them. More importantly, I think, is the recognition. We said before, there's this desire to have other people involved. And if you take, again, Indigenous communities, it's amazing to me how a lot of the communities have developed with band councils particular ways to interact with them. And they've got a whole set procedures. So you don't start by calling them up or sending them an email saying, we'd like to meet with you. They always have it documented in some way. How we want to deal with you, or what level of subjects, and what level of subjects are we prepared to deal with you, and so on. And usually, it's amazing that our municipal clients don't seem to have that very well in hand. And so we do a lot of research on that to find out how exactly we do it. But then we, on the other side, we have to coach our clients on that aspect by saying, just because you haven't had a successful relationship with this neighboring band council or this regional group, we're not going to solve that in 6 to 8 to 10 months. We can start you on the way, but we're in and out here. You're the ones who stay here forever. So we will help you set that up, but we're not going to go in and solve problems right away. Mind you, we do when we bring in people who are were specifically knowledgeable about that community, it's awfully helpful to speed up the process in that respect.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing is with this push to ensure that the process is community-led and community-engaged, but most importantly, that community-engaged process is also diverse and inclusive, and is ensuring that kind of equity-deserving groups are getting a voice at the table, and not just a tokenistic voice at the table, but like a true, authentic, fully engaged voice at the table. We're running into these challenges around authentic engagement, which is, to your point, you can't just come in and say, we're going to have a conversation today and assume that you're going to solve all the world's problems in that hour and a half or whatever. And especially if there's been historical kind of challenges in the relationship between the municipality and this community, and there's obviously power dynamics at play and things like that, that kind of finding a way to engage them in the process in a way that's founded on mutual trust, that's founded on this idea that this is just a first touch point, to your point, that's going to be the start of a long-lasting kind of mutually beneficial relationship and partnership, and just like making sure that engagement is authentic and it's not just, oh, we're random consultants, we're going to talk to you for 5 minutes and then we'll leave and then that's it. And I think that what we've learned is often it's hard to get there if you don't have a community connector. So often that's where we will work with partners who we know already have that authentic relationship. For lack of a better term, they have that kind of social capital to come into that community and say, this is coming from a place of genuine desire to build trust, build a relationship, and ensure that you're engaged in this process fully, not just today, but as the plan gets implemented as well. And it's hard for us to communicate that if we don't already have that foundation of trust. So that's where those community connectors are really important. And we find that we need them specifically for certain communities that has a more challenging relationship with the municipality or the body that we're working with.
Couldn't have done a better expression, Mila. Just wonderful. Just as a final point, for us, it's kind of a balance between treating a community uniquely with its unique issues and challenges and opportunities. And everyone is, it's counted as very unique in so many ways, each community. But there are best practices, and we've only touched a little bit on some of the engagement ones, but just in terms of the analysis and looking at other communities, which I've just said is almost impossible to find because everybody is different, but there are some common points of reference that we'd like to bring in and show that as part of the overall context from which we can derive the main goals and objectives and actions that stem from it. And as typical in a plan with an implementation plan that goes along with it. So to get there, we use our bag of tricks, as it were, to do the research, do the consultation, and then bring it in together with what seems to be, from external observations and practices, what's best. It's a movable feast, let's put it that way. It's not something that's going to remain cast in stone for forever. You know, that's how we like to think of it, as that blend of the unique with the best practices.
That's great. Thanks for this great chat, great discussion about culture planning, and look forward to more work in this area.
Yeah. And if you have anything you would like to discuss with us about practices and opportunities or specific ideas, you can contact me or Mila. Our links are in the show notes. You can also talk to any of the folks at the ACA. See you next time.
And And that wraps up our ninth edition of At the Mic au Micro, a podcast of Arts Consultants Canada. For information on ACCA and our members, please check us out online at artsconsultants.ca. To send us feedback or questions on anything you hear in this podcast series, please email us at podcast@artsconsultants.ca. And remember to check our show notes in this podcast for links mentioned during the program. Et notez bien que quelques épisodes sont en français. Ils nous offrent accès à un service de traduction de ne rien manquer. Thank you so much for joining us on At the Mic. Remember to subscribe to this podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Until next time, and again, thanks for listening. À la prochaine.